Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Happy holidays, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Holidays were good. The pandemic has been a pain in the butt, but we are going to get through it on today's podcast. Phil, did you have a Merry Christmas?
I did. Despite everything in the atmosphere, we went out and we saw a bunch of family that we haven't seen in a while, and Santa was good to the kids, despite me having to stay up till 1 in the morning putting together a basketball hoop that Santa got all the credit for. It was a pretty wonderful Christmas.
So why is Santa taking credit for all your hard work, man? I don't think that's fair.
I don't know. Like, it's much more magically believable that Santa set up a basketball hoop with a wave of, like, I don't know, Rudolph's nose than it is that, you know, Dad stayed up for 4 hours, you know, watching Die Hard and assembling a basketball hoop.
Well, Owen looks ready, by the way.
Yeah, he does.
Early returns of him on that hoop looking pretty good. So, you know, just Shaka, be aware if you're doing in recruiting for 20, 30, whatever it is.
He can lay up on the left side of the hoop better than some of the current players on the roster. But other than that.
Well, that's great to know. So, as I'm sure you are all very much aware, COVID protocols are wreaking havoc in college basketball, canceling games left and right. I think conferences are doing their best to make adjustments. Marquette's scheduled game against St. John's, which was scheduled for Wednesday, is off. Not sure when or if it will be made up. We're doing this thing again, Phil, where I have to start saying Marquette is scheduled to play or hoping to play teams. So I guess we might as well start there. I mean, the last game against Connecticut, it's so long ago, I almost forgot what happened in it, but we can kind of touch on that as we kind of go through what's going on. But I don't know what to say, Phil, except it's frustrating that we're back in this spot, but I am still hopeful that this season will get completed to some degree. I know there will be a tournament in some shape or form, I'm sure of that, but it's just frustrating that, you know, I'm on Twitter every day waiting for somebody to say Marquette's next game has been canceled due to COVID protocols.
Yeah, it is pretty frustrating, and I think we're, you know, this podcast very well may be dated within 48 hours of us putting it together, because it feels like the protocols, the expectations are kind of rapidly adjusting. Whether that's good or bad, we're not here to, you know, we're not doctors nor scientists nor, you know, even competent podcasters. We're simply a couple of jabronis on a mic. So I think it's changing. It sucks that the St. John's game was canceled, because I was really looking forward to that game. And I think we'll get into it a little bit around the actual basketball, because I think that would have been a very telling data point around whether, you know, Marquette is good and played tough teams, or Marquette is average and outperformed being average against good teams. But yeah, it's just a constantly changing and evolving, and I get it's frustrating, and I think everyone's pretty sick of what's going on. So I think there's going to be, like I said, I think there's going to be some adjustments, and we're going to probably late January here, I think we may get back on the straight and narrow, but I don't know. Who knows? It's a pretty fluid situation, it seems.
Yeah. Let's, you brought up, you know, what Marquette is. Let's go back to the UConn game for just a little bit. We are going to get to your questions, by the way, in just a few minutes. We had asked for questions this week because we figured we should kind of keep it relatively evergreen for this week's pod, because we don't know when the next game is going to be played for sure. But we are going to get to your questions in just a minute. We appreciate all the responses we got, and we'll dive into those in a minute here. But going back to that UConn game, seems like it was like a month ago, Phil, but it was just about a week ago now, and you know, that was a game, even though Marquette lost, I was pretty encouraged by the effort. I mean, they were without Daryl Morcell in that game. Mm-hmm. That was like the first hit of COVID protocols that Marquette has had to deal with. Morcell missed the game, but no one else did. So I mean, they were able to get by on whatever they had to do to get enough players through protocols and test negative so they could play the game. And I thought they played really well. They just didn't win. And I think it was just a situation that another, we said this after the Xavier game too, that just an experienced team just kind of outlasted this young team. And, you know, a couple bounces here, a couple fouls there, it might have gone a different way and just a couple points short in the end. Despite the loss, I was impressed with Marquette's effort again in the loss to UConn.
Yeah, I think again, and this has been the theme the last couple of games. I mean, they've kind of flipped the script where earlier in the season they were starting slow and then finishing strong at the end. And I think Marquette was starting a little stronger the last couple of games, which is good, right? I don't know what, I couldn't speak to what exactly caused that change. I just, you know, you see the change. Perhaps it was, you know, the moving Omax out of the starting lineup, or, you know, getting more minutes out of Greg, etc. But, you know, they've certainly kind of changed up their approach, you know, to the starts of the games. But, you know, like the last couple of games, this was one where, you know, they clearly could have folded, you know, at some point in the second half, you know, where the game maybe started to get a little bit away from them, but then fought back. And they were within, again, if memory and many beers ago serves me, they were within a possession or two. I think if I'm recalling correctly, Tyler Kolek had a three with a minute and a half or 2 minutes to go that could have taken the lead for Marquette. And then he also had a layup he missed that could have tied up the game against UConn. So they were in a position to really put
and
the
then,
pressure on
Kerr
him.
Had that.
Yes.
And then Kerr had that missed dunk that was just a killer.
Yes.
Because he had played well that game. I think, you know, Kolek was great for most of the game, just, you know, getting the ball inside and creating space for bigs, whether it was Kerr or whether it was Lewis, getting easy buckets. And, you know, going into that game, Phil, we would talked about maybe getting to the rim more and shooting fewer threes. And that essentially was the plan, it seemed. They only shot 15 threes and made five of them. That's pretty good for
right.
this team to shoot 33% from three and get inside as much as they did. And I forget what that Kerr dunk would have made the score. It would have been really, I don't think it would have given them the lead, but it would have either tied it or brought it within one. And then it just bounced off the back rim and UConn went the other way and got a bucket. And it was just never, they never contended for the lead again. And like, again, I hated it for Kerr because he had played well, but that's just a lasting image from that game that you just kick yourself like, God, just a rough bounce, you know, and otherwise that game could be a little different.
Right. Well, and Kerr, I mean, you know, to your point, Kerr would have, he went 4 of 6 in the game. If he gets that dunk, he's 5 of 6. Like, you cannot, there's nothing there to fault or question, you know, a big man going 5 of 6 in a critical game. Right. So like, the minutes balance was interesting, right? Obviously, Kolek played the most minutes. I think where it hurt is, you know, we saw RJ Cole go off, you know, considerably, you know, more so than just generating offense and creating offense for others. But he, you know, he scored 20 points, which you got to think Daryl Morcel helps a little bit there. But, you know, despite that, playing shorthanded, Marquette put themselves in a position to try and win. You know, I know we're all jaded with the too young excuse from the Wojo era, but I mean, some of this is just an inexperienced team, right?
Yeah, I really don't know what to add to that. It was a game that they were expected to lose, and they did lose, and then you don't have one of your top players, maybe the top player on the team going into it. And then you're still competitive and are within a couple buckets late in the game of taking the lead or winning.
Right.
Just sucks, but, you know, you learn from it and move on. And I think maybe those guys maybe even show themselves something that if everybody steps up, they can compete with the best. And if you have Morcel the next time around, maybe you can pick off one of the better teams in the league. And maybe you feel really confident heading into that St. John's game this week if it's played, and now obviously it's not, and who knows if it'll be made up, but I probably would have been a little more optimistic going on the road to St. John's this week if the game was played and with a full roster.
Oh, I would have come on this podcast and wildly predicted a Marquette victory over St. John's. I mean, not just that I don't know that St. John's is that good, but I think one of the things, and it's easy to say this is Pollyannish or you know, optimistic Phil's out of his cage again or whatever, but like, you know, yes, Marquette is 8-5 on the season, 0-2 in the conference. But if you look at the strength of schedule, it's a pretty remarkable strength of schedule, right? Like, I think Marquette has played a lot of tough games. They've won some, they've lost some, but the games they're losing, they're still in with one or two exceptions. They're very much in the games and challenging in those games, and I think that bodes well. And weirdly, the Big East schedule generally, or what's left of the Big East schedule after we played our first two games against Connecticut and Xavier, what's left of that Big East schedule, I think, lends itself towards it. It actually gets easier than the schedule Marquette's played to date, right? So if the schedule gets a little bit easier in total, and Marquette's been playing pretty good against a hard schedule, we should start to see, you know, on those coin flip games, you should start to see Marquette coming out ahead as opposed to behind, like they did against, you know, say a UConn or one of the other non-conference games.
I mean, the window's open to start getting some wins, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, according to KenPom, we talked a lot about how tough December was. Well, now we flip the page to January. According to KenPom, Marquette has a favorite against Providence, a favorite against Creighton this weekend, a one-point underdog to Georgetown on the road. I think that's a winnable game.
Very much.
And then a favorite against DePaul. Now, granted, all those spreads on KenPom, they're all one-point spreads except for DePaul, which is a three-point spread Marquette favor. But the bottom line, those are four games that Marquette has to go into pretty confident that they can win. So, four-game winning streak maybe sounds optimistic, but it certainly also sounds realistic to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm willing to bet, again, assuming the four games all happen, we know Georgetown and St. John's and Seton Hall have all struggled with COVID protocols right now. But if all four of those games happen as scheduled, I have to think KenPom's one thing. I have to think Marquette's favored in all four games in Vegas.
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, the only one I can think of that maybe not is the Creighton game, but still, like, that's the oddity of KenPom. Of the four games that we're talking about, Creighton, Providence, Georgetown, DePaul, the only one we're not favored in on KenPom is Georgetown, and I'd actually make the argument that's the one game we should be favored in. I know it's on the road, but, like...
Right, I would agree. Like, you know, trying to be as respectful as I can, but Georgetown is just not a good team.
No.
And that is a game Marquette absolutely should win if you want to talk about keeping your tournament hopes alive, solidifying an NIT resume. You can't lose to Georgetown, not this Georgetown team. So yeah, I would agree. Despite that's the one loss predicted on KenPom, that's the one game over the next four that I may be the most confident that Marquette wins.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I just really hope. I mean, I am. Again, despite the record, and some may be like, well, why weren't you this excited in the back half of the Wojo era? Because this isn't that different. And I'm like, it's not the record that's got me excited. It's one, the style, and it's two, the, like, I can see a path to success in the Shaka era that I never saw in the late stages of the Wojo era, right? The Wojo era was ping-ponging between wins and losses that almost had, you know, that were almost random in nature, right? Versus I can see a path and a potential for success with this team. I can draw a straight line between here and there and say, this is where the success occurs. And that's got me excited. So I'm really looking forward to watching, you know, and like I also said, the style, right? Like, you know, I'm sure there's folks that are frustrated with the team at times because they are not, you know, an offensive juggernaut and can't just go get a bucket whenever they want. But this is a team that works hard, you know, wins with defense. And I really think the last couple of games they've found ways, in part with Tyler Kolek's, you know, just otherworldly passing ability, they've found ways to unlock Justin Lewis, and that's pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah, this team competes in a way that we are not used to seeing over the last 6-7 years.
Right.
Like, you know, when we were the most frustrated previously, the Wojo teams would regularly come out non-competitive, giving you little to no effort defensively, and then just falling behind like by 15-20 points, and then maybe you get a late rally when the other team calls off the dog to make it look respectable. Whereas with this team, yeah, they may be losing some of these tough games, but they are going toe-to-toe with some pretty good teams, and then just missing a few shots at the end, and it's just those are the L's are stacking up. But I have not once this season accused this current team of being non-competitive, or like at least not giving like a great effort. I mean, the Bonaventure game wasn't competitive; they were just totally overmatched in that game. But I've never like watched a Marquette game this season and thought this team is not ready to compete, because they've been ready to compete in every game. They got blown out a couple times, right, but they've been ready to compete in every game.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. They are playing with the right attitude. The results, right, or the scoreboard may not always reflect the outcomes that we want, but there has never been a time where this team is like given up or you know, just not, you know. I mean, obviously the first 10 minutes in the UCLA game were extremely frustrating, but that was like, again, if you look at it through the lens of, was the offense working correctly? Were they getting open shots? Then yes, it was a success. It's just the fact that the shots were not going in that resulted in such a lopsided score. And when you look at the balance of that game, you know, Marquette more than held their own. So it's, you know, it's lapses in success that are leading to losses. It's not, you know, just inability to get things done, right?
Right. And hopefully they get it done in their next game. You know, it is with great hesitation I bring up that the next game scheduled for Saturday, New Year's Day, 11 a.m. on FS1, is against the Creighton Blue Jays. It is at home. It is at Fiserv Forum. Scheduled to be played. I must emphasize that. But this is, you know, Creighton, you know, looking at their schedule up until December 17th, they thought, some highs and lows here. Nah, I don't know if they're all that good. And then they go out and blow out Villanova by 20 points.
Yeah.
So if that Creighton team shows up at the Fiserv Forum, it might be a tough day for your boys. But if it's the Creighton team that has shown up for most of the games this season, I certainly think it's winnable. And, you know, Villanova just had a terrible game from three. They were 4 from 23 in that game, and that just did them in. So let's not go 4 from 23 from three in this game against the Creighton Blue Jays.
It's potential. We have that potential.
I mean, if Marquette shoots 23 threes, going 4 of 23 is possible, but we'll see how that goes. But you know, their numbers on KenPom are pretty good. You know, a little bit better than Marquette's overall. Their offense is 51st in the country, defense 65th. Both those a little bit better than Marquette, which ranks 99th offensively and 70th defensively. Defensive numbers, let's see. The effective field goal percentage, 43rd in the country. Things that I could just go down the list here, things that jumped out. Their 2-point percentage defense is probably their best, most impressive number. They're 12th in the country, holding opponents to 42% on their 2-point shots. If Marquette is going to beat the Blue Jays on Saturday, Phil, what needs to happen other than the game actually happening?
Well, yeah, I think it's a continuation of the theme we talked about in the UConn game. Get into the paint and get shots up at the rim, right? Like, Creighton is looking to deny paint touches, looking to try and stop the shots. And we need to generate fouls. We need to generate buckets inside the arc. If we're going to settle for threes, which is largely what Creighton wants, we're gonna be in a world of hurt because it's not a strength. So I think we really, on the offensive end, I'm not worried about the defensive end. Yes, I know Creighton's a better offense than our offense is, at least, you know, statistically. I just think that Marquette's defense will be sufficient to contain Creighton's offense. It's going to be a question of whether our offense can keep up with Creighton's offense you know, given Creighton's defense inside the arc.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary right there. I was just scanning the stats while you were talking to try to figure out where I want to go for Take My Money before we move on to some questions from the folks out there. You know, I mean, I just like what Mark, what we saw. I almost want to just say Take My Money is play the game.
It's not terrible.
Like let's just have a game be played.
Oh my God.
That would be,
you know, I just have to say, I cannot believe we're here again. Like, this is so frustrating and silly.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I'm just going to have to think on it because I got nothing on top of it. Maybe if I figure it out by the end of the pod, I'll throw it out there. Otherwise, I'll just wait to make sure the game's being played on Saturday and throw something out. How's that
sound? Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. Why take up the MUBBTMM brain power if it's not going to be used?
Yeah, so we'll wait to make sure the game's going to be played, and then I'll throw something out on Twitter on Saturday. So let's go to the question, shall we?
Yes,
we appreciate
please.
Everybody responding to it.
Yes.
We just pick out a few here. Some are basketball related, some are a little silly, but we'll start with this. Our old friend Sam Newberry, who writes for Anonymous Eagle and Mid-Major Madness, he threw out, is Kerkweth better for this team than Theo John would have been had he returned? And I think that's an interesting... I think it's an interesting question, because, I mean, they're different players, but statistically they bring kind of the same thing sometimes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to answer, because it's, I don't know, it's hard for me to envision Theo being better than Kerr has been, but I also can't say definitively that Theo would be worse than Kerr has been. Where do you stand on this question?
Yeah, so it's a great question. It's a real brain tease. I think the trade-offs would be, and maybe this is obvious to other people, and you know, and I'm just stating the obvious, but like, I feel like Theo would have given us a little bit more of an athletic presence, you know, in the pick and rolls, an ability to slip screens and get buckets, but at the detriment of a shot blocking rate, right? Like, Kerkweth is going to finish second overall, you know, in single season block records for Marquette. And, you know, it's pretty clear in December that's going to happen, which is impressive. And Theo could generate blocks, but not nearly at this rate. So you really, you know, it's kind of a trade-off between, I think Theo would generate more offense if he was on this team, but I think Kerr is more valuable than Theo would be because of what Kerr brings on the defensive end.
Yeah, it's just like Kerr's just like that lanky, like wild swing shot blocker, right? He's like got those really long arms, and
right?
That long reach that that Theo didn't quite have. But Theo was a great shot blocker. I mean. I thought Theo was a great shot blocker until Kirk came in here. Like, okay, well, no, like, this is a great shot blocker.
Right.
Just a step better. Not that Theo was ever bad in that regard. I want to say, isn't Theo, like, top 10 all-time at Marquette in shot?
I want to say block? Yes. I don't have it
yeah,
in front
I
of
don't
me.
Have that in front of me. But I know he's way up there. I just remember looking up, like, with a fifth season, he probably could have, had he returned, I think he would have definitely finished second, but he would have never caught McIlvain.
Yeah, no one's going to catch McIlvain.
If Theo played eight seasons, he wouldn't have caught McIlvain. But yeah, so I think Kerr, he might be just a little bit better. And who knows, maybe Kerr might be good in a way that, like, I guess the timeshare with Oso is also a good thing. Whereas
right.
if, like, maybe if you still have Theo, it's almost like a bit of a pressure that Theo has to play the lion's share of the minutes, and Oso's strictly a backup with spot minutes, whereas, like, it's more of like a timeshare between Kerr and Oso right now, and I think that's good long-term that
right.
Oso's getting more minutes now.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Maybe it is. Maybe he is a better fit for this squad. Well, maybe not necessarily a better player even, but maybe just a better fit.
Yeah, well, and I would say this. The other sneaky advantage Kerr has over Theo is that Kerr doesn't get called for fouls simply for existing, whereas Theo had, you know, at least once a game was called for fouls that weren't really fouls, but just simply because he was, like, you know, twice the size and you know, made of pure titanium compared to the right. players he was screening.
Yeah, like a guy walks into him and like falls to the floor. Like Theo's like, I'm just standing here, man. But he falls to the floor, and that's a foul. Like Theo had always got. I haven't watched that many Duke games this year, so I don't know if that's still happening to him.
Well, he's got the Duke whistle there, so you know that it kind of balances out.
It does balance it out. He does get the friendly Duke whistle. So I guess to answer Sam's question, I would say he may be just a better fit.
Right.
Maybe not a better player, but maybe a better fit for this kind of rebuilding squad here. So good question. I'm not sure we even gave him a definitive answer there, but I think that's kind of where I am.
Right. I'm all right.
So next question came from Johnny on Twitter. He said, I know Greg Elliott is getting more opportunities, but should he be getting more offensive plays drawn up for them, saying that he thinks, you know, outside of Justin, Greg is probably the go-to guy late in the game that he would like to see more. I wouldn't hate it for more offensive opportunities from Greg, because I think he has taken positive steps in his last few appearances after that shaky start. After his suspension, it looked like it took a few games for him to get into a rhythm, Phil. But I think Greg has been getting better and better. I'm not saying that he should be a number one go-to guy. It's not like he's going to be our, I'm trying to think of a comparison that he's going to be our number one guy that we're drawing up. He's not going to be Marcus Howard,
right?
Where we're drawing up every play for him. Like, we got to get him the ball every time. Like, not that. But I mean, I wouldn't hate a couple more looks for him, because I still think he's probably our best, if not second best, three-point shooter.
Yeah, I mean, percentage-wise, like, as long as you ignore Amari and Ellis's 3-for-5, I mean, Greg Elliott is statistically our best three-point shooter. I think there's a little bit of nuance in Johnny's question, in that, like, do I think Greg and or Justin should be the go-to guys late in the game? Absolutely. Like, do I think that we should be creating shots for Greg and Justin in the last 2 minutes? 100%, right? Like, I think that's where the offense should flow. But I will say, like, in the general gist of the game, I think Greg, at least right now, is getting the right amount of offensive possessions, right? Like, you know, Greg is somewhat athletic, but unfortunately his injuries over time have slowed him down, and he's fine from 2-point range, but he has a strength towards 3-point shooting, and I don't think we want to overemphasize or over rely on that. So I think the answer to the question is, I think Greg is, you know, it's, you know, not to go full 10 things I hate about you, but you know, there's underwhelmed, there's overwhelmed. Can you ever just be whelmed? I think Greg is whelmed, right? I'm right where Greg needs to be in terms of the game.
Yeah, I think this team is at its best when Tyler Kolek is driving and creating for big guys for high percentage shots. I thought that worked great, especially early on in the UConn game. It didn't, you know, they didn't end up winning the game, but I thought Kolek did an excellent job doing that. So if he can continue to drive and create for those big guys and get whether it's Kerr or Oso or Justin Lewis or, you know, even Joplin when he's in there, or even Omax, who actually had a pretty good game against UConn. Creating for those guys is great. And yeah, if you get some open looks for Greg or Cam Jones or Darren Morsell, get those open looks for those guys. But yeah, I think that's where the offense is at its best, is what Shaka did for especially the early part of the game against UConn, is Kolek creating those high percentage shots.
Yeah, and complete, like, I think we have to acknowledge, like, Tyler Kolek, I know he's struggling from a shooting standpoint. We mentioned his missing a couple of shots late in the game. But, like, I mean, his assisting has been ridiculous. The ability, you know, even without, you know, scoring points, which you would think would draw more defensive attention and create bigger gaps for him to pass into, even though he's struggling to score buckets, his ability to find the open man in a position where a shot is a good shot is, I don't want to say otherworldly, because that's a bit hyperbolic, but it's really damn good. Like, really good.
Assist rate is 22nd in the country on KenPom.
Right.
36.4. So That's elite. That's damn good.
And think how much higher that assist rate would be if we were 10 percentage points higher in our shooting percentage, right? Like, you know, that's assist.
Yeah, like if you had a couple more legit snipers from three. Exactly.
Right. I mean, he could. I mean, you're talking if, you know, I'll pick on Justin Lewis. Justin Lewis is shooting 26% from three. If you take 10 of those shots from Justin and give them to someone else that's really good at shooting 3-point, or, you know, hell, take 10 of those shots and give them to Greg, right? Like, Tyler's assist ratio could be, you know, top 10 in the country. Like, that is good. Well, like, just we need to send mixtapes of Tyler just setting everybody up to every recruit in the country and say, hey, you want to come play with this guy? He'll get you points.
Right. Show that to whoever the best shooting transfer is on the market.
Right.
This spring. Yeah, like the whoever the number one shooter in the country who's in the transfer portal this spring, say, hey, man, we got a guy who can get you buckets.
Right.
Come take a look at this.
And it's just shocking to me because I did not, like, it's crazy to me because, and it just goes to show you that preseason does not matter and we know nothing. But I would have been convinced that Kolick was going to be the sharpshooter and the creator on this team was going to be somebody like Stevie Mitchell. And
right.
And Tyler is clearly the creator. He is clearly the point guard of this team and needs to play max minutes at the point guard position. And he, you just need to match him up with, you know, above average to elite shooters. And this offense could really hum.
Yeah. And that is certainly, I think, one of the goals in recruiting going forward. Just add a few more shooters. And, yeah, as long as Tyler keeps creating those high percentage shots in the middle for the big guys, the offense has potential to keep growing with him leading it. And, you know, if his own shooting comes around, his own offensive rating and profile could continue to blow up as well. So somehow that Greg question got off to a rant on Tyler Kolick, but still a good question, a good discussion. So next one comes from Nick Thorne. He asked, do you think Joplin gets more minutes than Omax Prosper by season's end? I would lean no, because, you know, I think Omax had a couple tough games, you know, in early December there, but I still think his general consistency is going to keep him in the lineup a little bit more. He had a pretty good game against UConn, again, especially with Kolick creating some easy opportunities for him. I would lean that Omax may be slightly ahead of Joplin, but maybe Joplin may take a few from him and maybe decrease Omax's minutes overall. But I still think if, you know, Shaq has to choose between one or the other on the floor, I would lean Prosper. What do you think?
I think practically speaking, Omax will have more minutes than Joplin at the end of the season. I mean, I'm sitting here driving the wheels off the David Joplin bandwagon. So I'm 100% for him getting more minutes. I think he has the right culture. I think he's got the, you know, he's putting in the effort on defense. He's not probably up to Shaka's level defensively, which is why Joplin isn't getting more minutes now. And that's fair. I'm not gonna question that. But I think David Joplin's offensive abilities, you know, lend themselves towards, I don't know that he'll be there by the end of this season, but at some time in his tenure at Marquette, I think David Joplin's offense will be, you know, elite-ish. Maybe not fully elite, like top 25 in the country basketball player from an offensive standpoint, but I think he's going to be extremely good offensively. He needs more seasoning defensively, and I get that. So I would love to see Joplin get more minutes, but I think practically speaking, just kind of Omax's flexibility, his streakiness, his ability to defend multiple positions are really going to lend themselves where he's going to generate more minutes than Joplin is. And that's fine. I'm not mad about that.
He's got a rebounding edge too.
Right. Yes. Certainly a better
like
rebound.
His rebounding numbers for a team that is pretty, mostly below average overall rebounding the ball, you probably need every rebounder you could get in there as often as possible.
Right.
And I think that's an edge Omax has. Not that Joplin's bad, but Omax's numbers are just better
right.
rebounding the ball. So I think that would give him an edge there.
Right. Yep.
Moving on. Ready to move for the next one? Let's go. This is from T-Nerb on Twitter. He says, "You are in charge of the NCAA selection committee. What change would you like to make for March with your new power?"
Ooh. Don't give me power. I will use it.
With great power comes great responsibility.
That is true. Thanks, Uncle Ben. So my change would be, I would actually create, and again, don't get on me about the practicality or the feasibility of this idea, but I would actually create a mini play-in tournament for the teams that are seeded, I'll say 11 or above. Like, I would take, you know, like, take, basically make it team bubble watch, but there's a play-in tournament to be the bubble teams.
So after this play-in tournament, would there be 64?
Yes. When the bracket begins? We'd be like, so basically, I'm trying to think of the math in terms of, so there'd be 48 teams that would play into the tournament. Like, because honestly.
And all those.
Yeah, go ahead.
So all those tiny schools, automatic bids that get 16 seeds, they're not going to Dayton in your bracket. They're all in.
Yes.
And then it's all these bubble teams that have to play in your play-in tournament.
Correct. And so what I would actually do is I would kill the conference tournaments, and I would create the bubble tournament as a result. So the automatic bids for regular season, so if you win the regular season, you're into the tournament, kill the conference tournaments, and do a bubble tournament. And the 24 bubble teams that come out of that tournament, the top 24 teams, however it works out, those teams are then in the March Madness tournament.
I like it. I like it. A little bubble tournament.
Yeah.
And then we start with a clean 64. That's a good idea. I don't know if I can top that one. That's pretty good. I would throw a couple ideas I have out here. One's kind of stupid, and one maybe might be feasible. One, I would ask the small bid leagues, the single bid leagues, to stop having conference tournaments for the most part. Like, if you've got a clear number one seed who's gone like 16-0 in your league, you should not have that team to make them prove it to earn your one bid in a winner take all conference tournament.
Mm.
If you got an undefeated team, I would say this: if you have an undefeated champion in a single bid league in the regular season, conference tournament's canceled. They're in. That would be one change I make. If you go undefeated in the regular season in your conference, you do not have to play the conference tournament. You won the league. You've got the bid. No conference tournament. Because get those good teams. Because I hate seeing that. Like a team goes 16-0 in like the SWAC, and then they get upset by the 8 seed in the first day of their conference tournament, and they're out, and they got nothing.
Right.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Like, get those teams that earned it over the regular season in the tournament. So that's one thing I would do. This is another thing I think would be, it sounds silly, but also I think could be feasible. I would create what I call the second guest committee. And this would basically be made up of, I don't know, a small blue ribbon panel of, say, 3-4 maybe media members who follow college basketball religiously, like people with serious credibility, like, I don't know, Jay Billis, Gary Parrish, Nicole Auerbach, you know, people who really are into this, Dana O'Neill. So after the committee is done with their bracket, the second guest committee goes in. They were not in on any of the selection, and they go through the bracket before it's released and say, okay, that looks good, that looks good. Wait, whoa, they're in? What the hell did you do? How are they in? And, like, you left this team out? And the second guest committee gets to make maybe a few adjustments, a few vetoes, or at least run it by the committee and give them a second look, maybe something that they overlooked while they were sitting in the room. And so they could maybe eliminate those one or two, like, travesties on Selection Sunday that, like, everyone looks at and says, how could you do that? Like, say, given like a Loyola Chicago team from a couple years ago that by all metrics should have been a 4 seed and got slapped with an 8. Something like that, you know? So I would create a second guest committee that could just kind of clean up the final bracket and just make it a little more accurate.
So let me less yes and your second guest committee. So here's a little bit of – I love the idea. Here's a little bit of the way I would tweak it. I would say, this second guest committee, they are chartered to do two things, and they only get to do each of these things once. They get to rectify one wrongly admitted team, right? Like, you know, they reject a team that's in the bracket that shouldn't have been and replace them with someone that should, right? Like they
have Syracuse.
Right. Right. Just whenever Syracuse is in the bracket, kick them out.
It's always there. Right. It's always Syracuse.
Right. It's always Syracuse. But the point being, they have, you know, an admittance correction to do, and they have to do it. They have to pick one team that the committee put in that is out and one team that the committee did not put in that is in their place. The second thing they do is they pick a misseeding. So they will say,
yes,
hey, team one is seated too high, team two is seated too low, let's swap it or adjust it or whatever. Or, you know, and again, you know, that one's a little more difficult. Maybe they, you know, maybe it's one of these like, hey, we adjust this team down the seed lines a little bit to put them in the proper seeding order. But I think those are the two things that, you know, second guess committee makes a ton of sense. I mean, one, it adds to the drama, and two, it gets a little bit of, you know, a little bit of flavor of like, hey, the committee, you know, maybe it puts pressure on the committee to get it right.
Yeah. I think it's a fun idea.
Yeah.
In your scenario, would the team that gets swapped out, would they know?
No, after the fact.
No. Like, would they know that they were the team that was swapped out, or would they just look at the final bracket? And
say, I think the second guest committee does their work like the next day, or whatever it is. Right? I don't know how the timing works out, but
my suggestion was it's done behind closed doors, and then
I want the drama up front. I want it visible, okay, and well known, that because again, it's some of it's the accountability. I want the committee being put on account for, well, you didn't get this one right.
Some people just want to see the world.
That's
burn.
True. That's fair. Now the other thing I would say, and this is a little bit dovetailing on my idea of, you know, of a bubble play-in tournament. If you don't want to go that far, I still think we should abolish conference tournaments. I think the automatic qualifier should go to the team that finished number one in the regular season. Like, the regular season should matter. And like you, I hate the whole, like, you know, the whole, hey, this team was the best one the whole season, and then they, you know, they lost in the second game of the conference tournament. Right. They don't get a bid as a result or whatever. I hate that. So I would abolish conference tournaments. And if all you do is abolish conference tournaments and then take that week to do a 96-team play-in, right? Like, expand the conference, you know, from 64 to 96 or something like that, right? You've bought an extra week because now you don't have to worry about the conference championships.
I kind of like that. No conference tournament, but you do have like a whole week-long bubble tournament.
Right.
And like, hypothetically, one of those bubble teams may have to win 8 or 9 games to win the national championship. But if you don't like that, maybe it'd be better in the regular season.
Right. Well, and just think about it from like, you know, from a basketball, it's better on the teams, right? Because you, like, one of the things I hate about the conference championships is how many times have we seen someone wins 4 games in 4 days, and then they just crap the bed in the tournament game, in the March Madness game, because, you know, hey, they, you know what, not that I want to, you know, make excuses for any team at all, but Syracuse, as an example, that Devendorf, they went to 6 overtimes against UConn that one year, and they ended up winning the conference tournament, and then they lost out in the opening round in the NCAA tournament. Like,
or how about Georgetown last year?
Right.
That was a terrible Georgetown team. They won the Big East tournament. Then they go out and get blown out in the first round.
Right. So I just think – I mean, I enjoy – am I going to hang a banner if Marquette wins a conference tournament at MSG?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't really – like, if conference tournaments were banned, I'd be fine. I'd be fine with – in fact, I'd be for it. I'm emperor, I'm banning conference
tournaments. Let's get a couple more here before we wrap it up.
Regular season regular season matter asked, as much as possible.
What is the favorite game you have attended in person? Now, I like the question. The only unfortunate thing is you and I are of the same era, So like we kind of have the same. But the thing is, you are a season ticket holder, so you have more recent games to choose from. Whereas, sadly, I've probably been to fewer than 10 Marquette games mm-hmm. since I graduated, which is depressing to think about, but I think it's true. So for me, it's an easy call. The favorite game I ever attended in person was the 2003 Elite Eight game against Kentucky, when Dwayne Wade had a triple double and Marquette went to the Final Four. So that's easily it for me. Now, if you want to go like regular season, I would say the
yep.
upset over Cincinnati in 2002, when they were number two in the country. They had like a 20-something game winning streak, and we rushed the floor. That was like the first big win, like really, really big win of the Tom Crean era. So it's like best non-tournament game, I would say, would be 2002 against Cincinnati.
Yeah, so the 2002 game, unfortunately, you know, I had alternative plans, so I watched all the game, but unlike you, I did not have the good sense to attend the Marquette versus Kentucky Elite Eight game. The 2002 Cincinnati game definitely sticks out. I mean, I have on my wall the picture of Dwayne Wade on everyone's shoulders with the American flag. It just an epic memory. A couple of others so that's probably my number one, but a couple of others I would throw out there that I've attended that I'm a little torn on. So one is the Villanova, when Villanova was number one, the fluky, clearly the best win in the Wojo era. I was obviously in attendance, went to CAFS after the game. Like, it was crazy. Now, granted, I was like, I don't know, at that point, probably 12 years out of school and then partying with a bunch of college kids. But, you know, whatever. I had fun.
You were the old guy in the club.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, that was such a quirky win, and like there was no rhyme or reason for why they won that. Like, that was just, I don't know, just pure dumb luck. So many things had to go wrong for Villanova for Marquette to win that game, you know. So that one's a little bit tainted. The other one that I absolutely loved in person for 99.9% of the game was the Reese Gaines Louisville regular season in February. You know, we stood in line for hours in the freezing cold. Crean brought donuts and hot chocolate, and you know, right. We were just having a grand old time. Got seats right in front of the student section. Went ballistic when Diener hit the three to take the lead with like, oh, I don't know, what was it, 3 seconds left or something like that.
Yeah, yep.
And then Reese Gaines broke our heart by hitting a three from the logo when we were barely paying attention because we were celebrating. You know, so at, like I said, 99.9% of that game, absolutely love that game. Just the back and forth, and it was Louisville, and I honestly hated Louisville more than Cincinnati, but in a like respectful way. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. Always hated Louisville, and yeah, like that game, yeah, that's probably the best game I've ever been to that Marquette lost.
It was
tough to lose that game, but I know the game you're talking about. Funny thing on your other choice there, it is hilarious that the answer to the trivia question, who is the only Marquette coach to defeat a number one team in the regular season, the only coach in Marquette history to do that is Steve Wojciechowski.
Those
are good picks, though.
Well, the other game I will say, and this is more of a personal statement, I will say that I was supposed to attend the Marquette Notre Dame game where Steve Novak hit a fadeaway three at the very end of the game to defeat Notre Dame in January snowstorm. But I listened to that game on the radio because I was driving to go on a second date to meet up and go on a second date with my current wife. So of games missed, that was one I wish I had been at, but not that hard because, you know, it worked out pretty good in the end otherwise.
Yeah, I think it worked out for you in the end.
Yeah.
Had a beautiful wife and two great kids out of it, so.
Yeah, they're all right. They're fine.
It did all right for you, so. Yeah. Right, I've got a couple more here that we're going to wrap this up. This one's way off topic. Then we're going to get one more that's basketball related that I really like to wrap it up. All right, so this one, rank the MCU TV shows. So you got five to choose from here for those not in the loop. It's the recently concluded Hawkeye, Loki, WandaVision, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and What If? So the MCU Disney Plus TV shows. If you're not up on those, sorry, skip ahead like 2 minutes and you'll get to the last one. Where do you rank the MCU TV shows, Phil?
Okay, so I'll admit off the jump, I haven't watched What If yet, so I'm going to put that last. I'm going to get around to it. It just didn't seem that important in the moment. But I would say, and I'm also going to avoid some, you know, recency bias. I really enjoyed the Hawkeye series. Like, I enjoyed it as a entertainment product. I don't know, like, that it did a lot as an MCU product. I thought it was good. I enjoyed the Christmas theme. So I think that aside, I would force rank them as WandaVision 1, Loki 2, Hawkeye 3, significant drop off, Falcon and Bucky show, and then we'll see what if is.
Okay, that's actually very close to mine. I have WandaVision 1 as well. Loved Elizabeth Olsen in that whole thing.
Yes.
Her impressions of various actresses throughout TV history were spot on. Her impression of a Julie Bowen from Modern Family was Emmy worthy in of itself.
Yes.
But the show was great. And
Agatha Harkness was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, that song is still stuck in my head. It was Agatha all along. Fantastic. And just like the hints of maybe where they might be going in the multiverse, where I think there were some teases in there that maybe let us down. And like, it taught me not to expect too much as far as reveals in TV shows.
Correct. That they're all boner jokes.
Yeah. Like, hopefully it learned me to expect boner jokes and not expect, like, you know, Magneto to appear in a TV show or something. No huge reveals. But overall, WandaVision I thought was the coolest story. I would put Hawkeye 2. Yes, maybe some recency bias there, but it was a really cool story, and I also think it also sets up some future things, and I thought the cast was really cool. I always liked the Daredevil show on Netflix. I thought that was really good, and for them to bring back Kingpin from that,
right?
I thought that was a cool drop. We'll see where they go with that going forward. I would put Loki 3, and I agree there is a drop-off, Falcon Winter Soldier 4, and but it's close between Falcon Winter Soldier and What If, just because, like, What If, like avoiding spoilers here, like, a lot of What If episodes ended with me saying, yeah, if that happened, that kind of would have sucked, so thanks for telling me that, if the story had gone that way. But I think the one thing I'll add about What If is it did tell some backstories on some alternate dimensions that may be relevant in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Well, and so, I think What If is going to have the same thing that a little bit of Eternals is going to have, right? Like, Eternals, you can review it in the moment and go, yeah, it was a fine movie, right? But it has to do so much heavy lifting for future movies and the Phase 4 stuff. And I'm not saying What If and Eternals are on the same level, but conceptually, they're both doing some heavy lifting for future plot development that we may retroactively go back and say, oh my God, they set up this and this and this, and that was amazing, and this was great, right? And I think that's where, like, why WandaVision is number one, right? Is it set up this whole concept of, you know, it really paid off, like, hey, not only are we gonna take the challenge of creating this whole, like, multiverse concept, or at least setting up that concept, but it, like, paid off in storylines, whereas things like Eternals and What If haven't paid off in storylines that may do so in the future.
Yeah, so that's why, like, even though What If ranks, just because you have five shows here, somebody has to be fifth, so What If is fifth for me. Falcon, Winter Soldier, I'm a huge Captain America guy, but it was just kind of okay overall.
I think the biggest problem with the Falcon and Bucky show was quite frankly John Walker, and I think part of that was I really enjoyed the John Walker plot lines in the comics, and then, like, the redemption arc of John Walker in Falcon and Bucky was so, like, rushed. Like, it was like, this guy's great. oh my God, what did this guy do? And then it's like, yeah, we're back on his team like an episode and a half later. And it's like, I feel like we could have played that out a little bit more. Like, you know?
Yeah. I think the favorite thing for me is that it introduced Val,
yes,
Julie Louis-Dreyfus, to the MCU. That's who's like my probably my favorite actress, one of my favorite actresses ever, because she's just so freaking hilarious and from Seinfeld and Veep. And the fact that she's in the MCU now is
and Christmas
awesome.
Vacation. The carpet is wet,
yes.
Todd.
I don't know, Margot. So yeah, that's a pretty solid ranking for me. Is WandaVision, Hawkeye, Loki, Falcon, What If? But loved them all. Can't wait for the next one. What is the next one? Do we know what number six is going to be?
There's a season two of Loki, but other than that, I don't know that I've seen any MCU TV announced.
Yeah, like I know Armor Wars is coming.
Ironheart.
Okay, yeah. She-Hulk is on the way. Miss Marvel is coming. And I want to say something else very... Moon Knight is coming sometime, but I don't know what order it is, so... Of those, I would be most interested in Moon Knight. But
agreed. Agreed.
All right. Last one. I love this one to wrap it up with. This is a great one from Kurt in Milwaukee. Rank the Big East coaches by who you'd want to have a beer with.
Can it be more than one beer?
Multiple. Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, let's figure, like, by have a beer, I mean go to the bar and drink till everybody's bored and ready to go home.
Okay. I will say this. I'm going to put Shaka number one. I don't think it's because I don't think it's because he's like going to be a fun. Like, listen, I would do anything to just talk to Shaka because I think he's a smart guy. I don't think he drinks that much. If I have to wear like a polo shirt seven sizes too hot, too large to make this happen, so be it. I just want to talk to Shaka for like an hour about basketball because
absolutely, I would talk to Shaka about basketball, about life. I think he's a fascinating guy. His podcasts with Homer are really interesting to listen to. I think he's got great thoughts on both, basketball, family, life in general. Granted, we're certainly a Marquette bias here, but I think he would be a great hang. And yeah, even if he doesn't drink and he just wants to have club sodas while I have the beers and he can be the driver, that's cool with me too. So
yeah, I'm fine. If you want to get in our DM, Shaka, we'll hang.
Yeah, first round on me. Absolutely. So who would you have after Shaka though? That's where it gets interesting.
Yeah,
I think most people expected us to have Shaka one.
Right. I'm torn. I have to admit, I'm totally torn. I'm torn between Jay Wright and Ed Cooley.
Oh, okay.
I think Ed Cooley probably also doesn't drink because he's really recently discovered, like, you know, healthiness and, like, good for him. But I think Ed Cooley would be an interesting guy to talk to. And Jay Wright, like, I just really want to get into Jay Wright's brain. Like, he feels to me like somebody that, like, you know, in interviews and like on television is one guy and like behind the scenes is just a dude that like will rip a fart and like just laugh hysterically. Like, I don't know why that is. I think Jay Wright has got some like just chill hang in him.
Yeah. I Jay Wright is my number three for like a lot of the reasons you said, but also I just like to pick the brains of successful people.
Right.
And I would just love to hear his philosophies on success, culture, and I'm sure he's got great stories from running that program and basketball in the Big East, basketball in the Philadelphia area. I think he would have a lot of really good stories. But my number two, actually, to me, I feel strongly about this too. My number two is Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
For the reason that he has got to have some amazing stories from playing in New York.
Yeah.
Playing in the old Big East with the Georgetown Glory days, playing with the Dream Team, and just his rise in coaching, like, you know, toiling around as long as he did as an assistant before he got this opportunity with Georgetown. I think Ewing would have amazing stories that could take you past close at the bar. And so for that reason, Patrick Ewing would be my number two.
You know, that's totally fair. Ewing was going to be next on the list after Cooley and Wright, like, just because I think they were like Cooley and Wright are like feel like they might be cool hangs. But Ewing, I would absolutely like sit cross-legged in front of him like I was a two-year-old and just listen to him tell stories like of his time playing against and with Charles Oakley and, you know, and the Jordan days in the original right. Big East. And I would just love to hear those stories.
Yeah, just tell me, like, just tell me your three best stories from the Dream Team. Like,
right.
There's got to be so oh many
Oh, my
good
God. Unfiltered. That, like Patrick,
yeah, off
this
the record,
is a bubble
stuff,
in which nothing will escape. Tell me the
exactly.
three best stories you had in the Dream
Stuff you would never say on television.
Right.
Between Jordan and Barkley and Karl Malone and David Robinson and just all those guys, I would just love to hear stories from the Dream Team. So that's why, and it just, it just the old Big East, right? Just those
right.
heated Georgetown, Syracuse, St. John's games. I'm sure he's got other stories. Had Hurley in there just because he seems like the kind of guy who's just, like the guy who just curses a lot. It just has just complaining about people in a hilarious way. I think he'd be funny to have some beers with too. So
yeah.
Hurley is in my top five as well. All right, so who do you have?
Yeah, I would put Hurley up there.
I put McDermott
sure.
last.
Okay, let's invert that. Who's last for you? I need to know.
He's next to last.
Oh,
for me.
See, I'm going to put Willard.
Like,
I want
Willard,
nothing to do with Seton Hall
not
or Willard.
To the
I
guy.
Just like out of
I
my
would eventually say something that I regret after a couple beers about a past Seton Hall Marquette game. We'd probably come to blows over Powell against Powell against Marcus Howard at some point. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes, that would I would yeah. within the first beer and a half I would
yes,
be like
total bullshit.
So
total
Powell bullshit. Totally and, should have been out of the game.
Yeah, McDermott.
Right?
I just don't know if I. And the thing is, there's a lot of guys in the middle who just don't. I feel don't feel strongly about one way or the other. Like Steele or Jordan. Like Jordan, I would probably put at the bottom too because I would probably say something like, "So why do you foul so much late in the game? Even
right.
when it's well out of hand."
I would like. Like unlike Kevin Willard, where I would say something to just like intentionally piss him off, like Lavelle Jordan, I would put him lower, but not that low because I would within the first quarter of a beer, I'd be like, so you know you ruined our season by getting, you know, Marcus Howard hurt when you fouled him late unnecessarily, yeah. right? Like, you know you're the asshole, right? Like, you just know that, right? Like, you know, that's I just know that's going to happen. He's not going to be happy with me. But that's fine.
Yeah,
like,
McDermott
I'll
just
talk
seems
to
like,
him
for I don't know.
A little
I just,
bit. Whereas
like
Kevin Willard, I want nothing.
Maybe he's hilarious after a few beers, but I don't know. It just seemed like he might be kind of bored.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
he
like,
said
I'd
some things that were decidedly
unhilarious.
I guess. So I don't know that he's... Correct. Yeah.
Yes. Like
yes. Correct.
Breath,
it, like it'd just, be like it'd be like trying to hang out with Bobby Knight, but less party. Talented. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And then I think Stubblefield, Anderson,
fine.
And Steele are just kind of the.
I like.
Eh.
Okay. That's good list.
I mean,
good list.
Cool.
I,
you want to hang
I like
out with
how
me?
We're
fine.
Like mostly
I'm
on
not
the same page with all of it, both top and bottom too. Like we both had shock at. No, we both had Shaq at the top. We both
correct.
Had Willard right.
Correct.
The bottom.
I'm curious.
Both big on Jay Wright, of course.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's good. That's interesting. What did you say you were curious about? Yeah, and again, yeah.
I'm just curious to see. I'm curious to see what the Twitter replies are. Right. Like, I mean, if people want to do 1 through 11,
yeah.
go nuts. But I'd be most curious.
Go,
like,
this will probably
who's your top two and who are your
as
bottom
talked
two?
About on the pod. That's
yeah. I just want to know who are the Marquette fans that are also
like
Kevin Willard
comes out
stands.
Of the woodwork, they, like
I just
like, hey,
so I can add to my block
hang.
List.
What are you
that's
talking
all
about?
Really uninteresting.
Yeah. So please hit us up on Twitter. Let us know. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Phil, you got anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here? I think we've talked for a good while now.
Yeah, no, I think for having almost no games this week and risking not having one on Saturday, I think we've talked plenty.
So remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
Let's have a New Apple Year's Podcast Day game and really as well. See what happens.
Cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave comments on cracksidewalks.com. Leave those coaching rankings by beers on cracksidewalks.com. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page for you as well. Phil, have a safe and happy new year. I don't know about you, but I would say almost certainly not even leave the house. I'd probably just be inside watching football. I'm getting too old for this shit. So I am just going to stay in, stay safe, and probably watch football and hopefully wake up to have a game on basketball game to watch on Saturday.
Absolutely. Well, you have a good, we'll talk to you in the new year.
Happy new year, everybody.
Stay safe New Year's Eve and everyone get at us with your beer rankings.